Hello, everyone. We are continuing on with A Treatise of Self-Denial from Thomas Manton. And last time we were continuing on with denying our self-will. And the first part was denying our will by obeying God in His laws, submitting to His laws. And then last time we did the second branch, which was submitting to the providence of God in patience and without murmuring. And the subsections of that were how far we're to submit to the will of God and providence, the grounds of this submission, and then helps to it. And that finished denying self-will. And that brought us up to the next section, which, Lord willing, we're going to continue on with this time. And I'll go ahead and begin. Mr. Manton says, the next branch of self-denial is denying self-love. God is the chiefest good and highest object of the creature's respect, and therefore we are to deny self, that is, self-love, a necessary doctrine. It is said in the latter times that men should be lovers of themselves, 2 Timothy 3, verse 1. Men have always been lovers of themselves in every age of the church, but in the lees and dregs of time, this evil shall most reign and prevail, R-E-I-G-N, and prevail. The latter times are inflamed with wars, and so all love to our neighbor is devoured, and with heresies, and so God is neglected, and then there remains nothing but self to be respected and adored. In the abbreviation of divinity, or in a moral consideration, there are made to be but three general persons or beings, God, your neighbor, and yourself. Now, when men have lost their reverence to God and their charity to their neighbor, self is the only, is only left to devour all the respect of the creature. Now, in treating of self-love, we must, number one, see how far it is criminal, and number two, then speak of the branches and kinds of criminal self-love. First, how far self-love is criminal. To love ourselves is a dictate of nature and not disallowed by grace. We read not that man is expressly commanded to love himself, because every man is naturally inclined to it. No man hath ever hated his own flesh, but loveth it and cherisheth it, Ephesians 5, verse 29. By natural instinct, all creatures move and act to their own good and preservation. But though there be not an express command, yet there is an allowance. It is implied in the precept, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. The thing enforced is love to our neighbor, but the thing implied is love to ourselves. There is an innocent affection planted in nature, moving every man to procure his own welfare. In procuring this welfare, we have a liberal allowance. Nature aims only at things necessary, but in grace, God has been indulgent, enlarging the bounds of allowance, and besides necessaries, has afforded us the conveniences and moderate pleasures and delights of the present life. Therefore, the motions of self-love are regular and tolerable as long as they do not entrench upon the privilege of God, but are subject to His will and the laws of sanctified reason. But when are they vicious and sinful? I answer, when they go beyond the limits prescribed, when self-love encroaches upon the love of God or the love of our neighbor, when a man loves no other but himself and makes religion and all to stoop to his private commodities or pleasures. Aristotle, in his Ethics, defining self-love, said, he is a lover of himself that doth all he doth for his own sake and with respect to himself, to his own pleasure and profit. But let us rather take the description from the Apostle in two places, Philippians 2, verse 21, those that seek their own things and not the things of Jesus Christ, and 1 Corinthians 10, verse 24, that seek their own and not another's welfare. Who mind the conveniency of their own life and their own private profit, P-R-O-F-I-T, without any respect to the glory of God and the salvation of others. This is self-love that is prejudicial both to God and our neighbor. When a man makes himself the center of all his actions without any respect to God or the good of others. But because particulars are most sensible, or we can understand them best, therefore, let me tell you, secondly, this self-love is twofold, to our persons and to our interests. I told you before that self is a capacious word and does not only involve us, but that which is ours. Number one, to our persons, we manifest that by doting upon ourselves and by the admiration of ourselves, and so it is contrary to true humility and lowliness of mind. And then number two, to our interests and enjoyments, we manifest self-love by an inordinate zeal and care of our interests, preferring them before the conscience of our duty to God and our neighbor, being loath to part with anything that is ours for God's sake. This I principally intend to treat of as being contrary to God's privilege of being the chiefest good, for this is a preferring something before him, or ahead of him, when we can neglect his glory or our obedience to his commands out of a zeal to our own interests. Now first, the first kind of self-love is shown by doting upon or admiring our own persons. Self-conceit must be renounced, as well as self-interest. When a man thinks of himself beyond what is meet or appropriate, and admires his own gifts and excellencies, this is to be in love with his own shadow, to become our own parasites and flatterers. Here I shall show you, number one, to what kind of persons this evil is incident. Number two, how it discovers itself. Number three, how odious it is. And number four, some remedies. Now, number one, to whom it is incident. To all men by nature. By long conversation and acquaintance, a man becomes enamored of himself and has high thoughts and opinions of his own excellency, as Goliath admired his own stature and Nebuchadnezzar his own Babel, that he had built for the honor of his majesty. There is a natural disposition this way, and there are none of the sons of Adam to be excluded. But usually, and most, it is incident, number one, to those that are most ignorant of the state of their own hearts. Revelation 3, verses 17 and 18, because thou sayest, I am rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing, and knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked, I counsel thee to buy of me gold tried in the fire, that thou mayest be rich. The church of Laodicea doted upon itself. She thought herself rich and wanted nothing or lacked nothing, when they wanted or lacked all things, though blind and unclean, yet miserably conceited. In a transparent glass, the least motes are seen, but in a thick bottle, we cannot discern the grossest dregs and sediment. Certainly those that have most light, they have lowest thoughts of themselves. He that knows himself best loves himself least of all. Love is always blind, especially self-love. It is but a fond fancy of that which is not. Romans 8, verse 9, for I was alive without the law once, but when the commandment came, sin revived, and I died. When Paul had but little knowledge, he had great conceit of himself. A short exposition of the law would beget a large opinion of our own righteousness. Usually what is wanting or lacking in the light of reason is made up in the pride of reason. So that was number one, those who are most ignorant of their own state. Number two, or especially those, number two, it is incident to men that by their own industry have raised themselves to any excellency, either in estate or learning or other endowments. There are none so apt to be puffed up and conceited of themselves as they are, for they look upon themselves as makers of their own fortune. They are not only drunk with their felicity and attainments, but admire their own prudence and diligence, by which they have compassed worldly greatness and excellency. It is a question who are most apt to dote on their own excellency, those that have been perpetually happy, or those lifted up out of misery and a low estate. In a perpetual hereditary happiness, there is little of our own acquest and purchase to be seen, but those that have raised themselves up out of a low condition are apt to be puffed up upon a double ground, their happiness and their diligence. They are happy, and they have made themselves so, as they think, and so dote upon their own prudence and diligence, as well as in their felicity and acquests. Acquests. So that was number two. Number three, it is incident to men of great gifts, especially after some public performance and exercise of them. It is hard to discover gifts with applause and not to be proud. Our minds are secretly enchanted with self-love and the music of our own praise. Therefore, the apostle forbids novices, those that were newly begotten to Christ, young men, to be put into the ministry, but very mortified persons, 1 Timothy 3, verse 6, lest being lifted up with pride, they fall into the condemnation of the devil. Men of great gifts and unmortified spirits are very apt to fall into pride and so into condemnation. In a strong wind, it is hard to sail steady. It is a question not easily decided which duties are most difficult, public or private. In private duties, there seems to be some difficulty because there we have no other witness but God, and so we are tempted to slightness, for everyone cannot see God. And in public duties, there we are tempted to pride and self-conceit in the exercise of our parts or abilities. Number four, it is incident to good Christians. They are in danger to be enamored of their own goodness. Pride once got into heaven itself among the angels, it crept into paradise, and the best heart can hardly keep it out. When men have withstood the lusts of the flesh and the lusts of the eye, yet they may be overcome with the pride of life. Look, as a castle, when it cannot be taken by assault, many times it is blown up. So when the devil cannot surprise and take us by other stratagems, by open assault, he seeks to puff and blow up the heart. Paul was like to be puffed up with the abundance of his revelations, 2 Corinthians 12, verse 7, though he were a sanctified vessel, and though his enjoyments were not of an earthly nature. It is a sin very incident to the children of God to be lifted up with a vain conceit of their own worth, although others are not liable to it so much as they are. It is no wonder for a beggar to call himself poor, as a drunkard to have such low thoughts of himself. They are not in such danger as you are. And it is a sin got out with a great deal of difficulty. God is forced to punish it with other sins. For common sins, God uses the discipline of affliction, but for this, he punishes sin with sin and gives us up to some scandalous fall that we might know what is in our own hearts. So that was number one, to whom it is incident. Number two, how it bewrays itself. I shall mention but two marks, or how can we discover it? Number one, or how's it discovered? Number one, by admiring thoughts and reflections upon our own excellency. A man is apt to entertain his own spirit, with privy whispers of vanity and to court himself, as it were, with suppositions of applause and honor in the world. Luke 1, verse 51, he scattereth the proud in the imagination of their heart. Proud men are full of imaginations and musings upon their own worth, their greatness, and excellency. This is the courtship that self-love makes to itself when men muse upon the excellency of their gifts and how far they excel or above others. As the strutting king in Daniel 4, verse 30, as he walked on the palace of Babylon, he is musing upon the vastness of his dominion and empire. Is not this great Babel that I have built with the power of my majesty and the glory of my magnificence? When men make an idol, I-D-O-L, of self, they are wont or often to come and solemnly worship it, to dote and gaze upon their own excellencies and achievements. But a sincere Christian's heart is taken up with admiration of Christ and the riches of the covenant. As Abraham walked through the land of promise, Genesis chapter 13, and said, "All this is mine." So carnal men are wont or often to take a survey of their gifts and excellencies, how far they excel others in parts or abilities, in prudence and estate, and so play the parasites with their own hearts. Number two, it discovers itself by partiality to their own failings. So you're partial, or you don't look as down upon your own failings as you might other people. Man is a very favorable judge to himself. Men favor their own sins, but with bitter censure comment upon the actions of others. Proverbs 16, verse 2, "All the ways of a man seem right in his own eyes, but God weighs the spirits." Mark, "It is in his own eyes." Man is apt to be partial in his own cause, blinded with self-love. When he comes to weigh his own actions, self-love takes hold of the scale, and so there is no right done. There is a great deal of difference between our balance, like a scale balance, and the balance of the sanctuary. Men are loath to see an evil in themselves. They can see motes in the eyes of others and severely censure their failings, but cannot see the beams in their own, Matthew 7, verse 3. A sincere heart is most severe against his own sins and flings the first stone at himself. But self-love is blind and partial. The apostles said that love covers a multitude of sins. It should do so in our neighbor, but it does cover that which is in ourselves. The cases of Judah and David were very famous. Judah, when he was to sit judge upon Tamar, would have burned her because she had committed adultery, Genesis 38, verse 34. But when he saw the bracelets, the ring, and staff, which he understood his own guilt, he becomes more favorable and mild. And so David, 2 Samuel 12, verse 5, when the prophet Nathan came to him after he had gone in to Bathsheba and represents the case to him, it is said, "David's anger was greatly kindled against the man. And he said to Nathan, 'As the Lord liveth, the man that hath done this shall die without mercy.' But when David had found to be the person, he was found to be the person himself, and the prophet tells him, 'Thou art the man,' then he was not so severe, his mind was more calm. In a disease, we think our pain the sharpest, so when truly cured of self-love, we think no sins like our own. The Apostle Paul counted himself the chiefest of sinners, and certainly a person so sanctified would not lie as Paul. He's so sanctified, he wouldn't lie. Now that was number two, how they're discovered. Number three, let me come to the odiousness of this sin. This is prejudicial to God, to your neighbors, and to yourselves. Number one, to God, it is flat sacrilege. We detract from God and rob him of the praise of his gifts that we may set the crown upon our own head. Habakkuk 1, verse 16, they sacrifice to their net and burn incense to their own drag. Instead of acknowledging God in their greatness, they cry up their prudence, valor, and understanding. When we intercept God's praise, this is to deify ourselves and put ourselves in the place of God. Trust and praise are God's own privileges. It is the rent, like paying rent, which God, as the greatest landlord of the world, expects from us. He has leased out mercies, like if you lease an apartment. He has leased out mercies and comforts to the world upon this condition, that we should give him the acknowledgement of praise. To intercept the praise due to him is to rob him of his rent and revenue. All creatures are bound to exalt and magnify God. Number two, it is prejudicial to others. Self-love makes men envious and slanderous. When men would shine alone and would have all the world else to serve for their foils, to set them off, therefore they blast their gifts with censure the other people, aggravate their failings, and load them with prejudice, that upon the ruins of their good name they might erect a fabric of praise to themselves. Self-lovers are always bitter censurers. They are so indulgent to their own faults that they must spend their zeal abroad. And therefore, observe it, the apostles, when they would dissuade from the pride of censuring, they always bid us to consider ourselves. Galatians 6, verse 1, if any brother be fallen, restore such a one with the spirit of meekness, considering yourselves. Do not set up a high conceit or conception of yourself, and so blemish others and make an advantage of their failings. So James 3, verse 1, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. If men would look inward, they might judge freely with more profit, profit, and less sin. The number three, it is prejudicial to ourselves. Inordinate self-love was the ruin of angels, and it will prove the confusion of men. He is the best friend to himself who loves himself least. Carnal self-love is indeed but self-murder. Properly, it is the hatred of your soul which is truly yourself. As the ape which hugs her young ones with too much earnestness crushes them and thrusts out their bowels, so this self-hugging will be your ruin, your ruin. It hinders us from the love of God, and those that love not God shall never be happy. And it is the cause of all sin. 2 Timothy 3, verse 2, men shall be lovers of themselves. It is set in the first place as the mother of all the rest. They shall be lovers of themselves, then covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers. So lovers of themselves, and therefore covetous, seeking to their own store, though the means be never so unjust and irregular. They shall be lovers of themselves, and therefore proud, as it is common for such men to gaze upon their own excellency and the idol, I-D-O-L, they set up in their own hearts. They shall be lovers of themselves, and therefore boasters. Men used to draw others to the worship of their own idols, insulting of others because they deify themselves, loving pleasure more than God, and gratifying their private appetites, though with the displeasure of God. Fierce, incontinent, it were easy to derive their pedigree. But to instance in a sensible inconvenience, self-love is a ground of self-trouble and discontent. When men set up a high price upon themselves, and others will not come up to it, then they are troubled and vexed. He that is low in his own eyes is secured against the contempt of others. They cannot think worse of him than he does of himself. It is true, a self-loving man may set himself low in his own expression, speak as if he were a vile creature, but that is but an artifice of pride, to beat self down that it may rebound the higher. If others should think of him as he speaks of himself, he would be much troubled. So he acts low, but actually thinks of himself as high, and then if others actually agree with him in thinking himself low, he ends up being troubled. So that was the odiousness of this sin, number three. Number four, to give you some remedies against this self-love, if you would not dote upon yourselves, consider, Number one, the vileness of your original. It is good to remember the hole, H-O-L-E, of the pit out of which we were digged. Agathocles, a potter's son, afterwards king of Sicily, would be served in earthen dishes that he might be put to mind, reminded of his first condition. We should all consider the baseness of our original. Why should we be proud of our own worth? We have been infamous from our birth, tainted in our blood, prisoners to Satan, defiled in nature, guilty of high treason against God. What a pitiful creature is man by nature. Certainly the angels, if they could be touched with such kind of passions and afflictions, they cannot choose but laugh at us to see us dote upon ourselves. It is as if a leper should be conceited of the comeliness of his own face and think every scar a pearl or a ruby. We still halt of the fall and maim of nature all our lives, and the longer we live in the world, we are the more sensible of it. A man that has been sick and begins to walk, he feels the aches in his bones. So after we are recovered, we feel the disorder of nature. We cannot do the things that we would, Galatians 5 verse 17. In Romans 7 verse 18, for I know that in me, that is in my flesh, dwelleth no good thing, for to will is present with me, but how to perform that which is good I find not. Number two, consider the purity of God. Much acquaintance with God in our thoughts would make us loathe ourselves. How did Job cure his self-love? Job 42 verse 6, mine eyes see thee, and therefore I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes. The only way to loathe and abhor ourselves is to think often of God's holiness. To this God must we be like in holiness, and when this holy God comes with his impartial balance to weigh the spirits of men, and I come to give an account to him, what a loathsome creature shall I appear. Whenever your thoughts begin to be tickled and your hearts enchanted with self-admiration, when you begin to muse how much you excel others in parts or abilities and prudence, turn your thoughts upon the excellency of God, and then you will cry out, O vile, unclean, and unworthy creature. As the prophet Isaiah, when he saw God in vision, Isaiah 6 verse 5, then said I, woe is me, for I am undone, because I am a man of unclean lips, for mine eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. When you think of the immaculate purity of the Holy God, H-O-L-Y, God, all your proud thoughts will vanish. Daniel said in Daniel 8 verse 10, I saw this great vision, and there remained no strength in me, for my comeliness was turned in me into corruption, and I retained no strength. Men are self-conceited because God and their thoughts are mere strangers. The stars shine most the further off they are from the sun. The less light there is, the more they will shine as at night. One seems to excel another. One star differeth from another in glory, 1 Corinthians 15 verse 41. But when the day comes, all the differences of the stars vanish, none shine. The heaven seems to be as if there were no stars at all when the sun rises and is shining in the daytime. So when God arises in all his glory, those that are apt to think themselves to be better than others, they see that all is nothing but darkness and mere imperfection in comparison of him. Number three, consider the greatness of your obligation. A man has no cause to love himself the more because he has more gifts than others, but to love God the more. Great gifts do not argue a good man, but a good God, the one who gave the gifts. The apostle said in 1 Corinthians 4 verse 7, who hath made thee to differ? If you excel others, consider who must have the praise and glory of this. Must you dote upon yourself, or love God that made you to differ? The more you have received from him, the more you are in debt to him. A man should be humble, not only for his sins, but for his gifts and excellences. The greater our gifts, the greater must our account be. Gifts and excellences lay a greater obligation upon us. It is not the greatness of gifts, but well using of them is the glory of the receiver, and that is from God as well. If you should be gracious and better than others, yet who made you better? It is an evidence you have gifts with a curse if they puff you up. Number 4, after every duty there is enough to keep you humble. When you have done the duty, either conscience works and smites for some failing, or it does not work. If conscience should not work, there is enough to keep you humble. 1 Corinthians 4, verse 4, I know nothing by myself, yet I am not thereby justified. If conscience should not smite you for one straggling thought in prayer, one carnal glance and reflection, yet still you must say, I am not hereby justified. God knows the secret working of my heart to which I am not privy. I am apt to be partial in my own cause. This will not quit me before the tribunal of God. So Luke 16, verse 15, ye are they which justify yourselves before men, but God knoweth your hearts, for that which is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God. He does not only say that which is esteemed among men, but that which is highly esteemed. And then he does not say God may not have such high thoughts of it, but it is an abomination in the sight of God. That which men call a rose may be found a nettle when it comes to God's judgment. That you call spice may be dung when God comes to make a judgment. And your sacrifices may be carrion, which I believe is like animals that have died out in a field or on the side of a road or something. But if conscience should work and smite you for failings, then there is enough to humble you and keep down those high thoughts that self-love is apt to put forth. 1 John 3, verse 20, if our heart condemn us, God is greater than our heart and knoweth all things. My heart now smites me that I have had some vain thoughts and carnal reflections while I have been doing something for God, but will not God much more? God sees with a more clear light. What is the light of my conscience to the pure eyes of his glory? God has an ocean hatred against sin, and I have but a drop. I may hate sin because it is against my interest, but God hates it because it is against his nature. His holiness sets him against it. God knows the privy turnings of the heart. The duty seems to be a strange duty wherein you will not find some matter of humiliation. So it's a strange duty if you are unable to find some matter of humiliation. Number 5, get this advantage of your failing, that you may be the more out of self-love with yourself, or out of love with yourself. Oh, what odious creatures should we appear if we did but keep a catalog and roll of every day's miscarriage, if all the errors of our life were but drawn up together. Now, whenever you put yourselves in the balance, graces in the one scale and sins in the other, your evils will much overweigh. Few and evil are the days of my pilgrimage, said Jacob. We have but a few days in the world, a short life, yet it is long enough for thousands of sins and evils. Our sins are more than our graces, because in every act of grace there is some fleshly adherence. It's tainted by our own carnal man in some way. We think well of ourselves. Why? Because we only take notice of our worth and excellency and not of our defects, as if the reflexive light were nothing else but to see the good that is in us. Consider, conscience was made to censure the evil as well as to approve the good. Romans 2, verse 15, their conscience also bearing witness in their thoughts, the meanwhile accusing or else excusing one another. It should be translated thus, accusing and excusing by turns, or accusing must take its turn. You are bound not only to know your knowledge, but your ignorance, not only to reflect upon your graces, but your sin. It is an easy matter to know our graces, but it requires a great deal of grace to get a humble sense of our continual failings. All right, that brings us to the end of the remedies of this self-love, which again was self-love is shown by doting upon or admiring our own persons. And then that brings us up to the second kind of self-love, which he says is a self-love to our interests and enjoyments. But we're going to go ahead and stop there for this reading, and then, Lord willing, proceed with that second kind of self-love the next time. But until then, go seeking daily that God grant a vision of ourselves, a true understanding of who we are, and a loathing of ourselves because of our sin in the sight and in the presence of a thrice holy God. Holy, holy, holy is his name. We pray that he grant us that and a continual growth in that, a constant state of humility and understanding that anything we have has been given to us by God. And we pray that he help us and keep us in this humble estate. And Lord willing, we will talk to you again soon.